Before we get started, we want to acknowledge the death of writer Toni Morrison. She died on Monday. She was 88. She won the Pulitzer Prize. She won the Nobel Prize. She won the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and she won the National Humanities Medal. Books like Beloved, Sula, The Bluest Eye, and Song of Solomon have inspired countless young writers and thinkers. There's a documentary called Toni Morrison, The Pieces I Am, that's in theaters in some cities right now, so seek that out. The way things worked out this week, after some discussion, we couldn't figure out a way to put together a show that would do justice to her work in the way we thought it deserved. But there's a flood of remembrances of her prose and her influence on and advocacy for other writers. There are also plenty of clips available where you can hear how she spoke about race and writing and life and beauty, and we encourage you to spend some time with those. We'll link to some favorite remembrances in the newsletter so you can hear from some of the people who felt her influence most keenly. She was a giant. She'll be greatly, greatly missed. What has muscles, wisecracks, muscles, car chases, muscles, and two big movie stars? The new film Hobbs and Shaw, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Jason Statham. The two play their characters from the Fast and Furious franchise spun off into a fresh adventure. They race a mechanically enhanced super soldier played by Idris Elba to recover a deadly virus before it can melt the entire population of the planet into a series of small puddles. I'm Linda Holmes. We're talking about big fights and big budgets on today's Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Netflix, presenting the highly anticipated third season of Dear White People. This season, the characters will follow their hearts and passions, shed layers of identity, and take on the issues that plague them in radical new ways. If last season was about uncovering the hidden truths that hold us back, this season is about shedding the beliefs that hold us back from revolution. Graded A by Entertainment Weekly, Volume 3 of the critically acclaimed series Dear White People is now streaming only on Netflix.
Support also comes from The Real Real, the leading reseller of authenticated luxury items. Shop luxury clothing, accessories, and fine art at unreal prices. From your favorite designers like Louis Vuitton, Gucci, Cartier, and hundreds more. And The Real Real authenticates each item to ensure it's guaranteed authentic. Shop in-store, on the app, or at TheRealReal.com and receive 20% off select items with promo code REAL.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Joining us in the studio is writer Chris Klimek. Hey, Chris.
I'm what you call a champagne problem, Linda.
And joining us from New York is our friend Daisy Rosario, an executive producer at Stitcher. Hi, Daisy.
Hello.
And continuing our tour up and down the East Coast, joining us from NPR member station WHYY in Philadelphia is our friend Christina Tucker, co-host of the Unfriendly Black Hotties podcast. Hey, Christina.
Hey, friends.
And of course, me. Back in the studio after several weeks away. It's so good to talk to all of you. And it's particularly good to be here to talk about a franchise that I have as much of a soft spot for as I do the Fast and Furious franchise. Because we should point out the technical title of this movie, the official title, is Fast and Furious Presents, : Hobbs and Shaw.
Yes, it's totally groundbreaking. There are two ampersands in this title. Never been done. They said it couldn't be done.
Two ampersands and a colon. All right.
Everything changed.
Daisy, are you a Fast and Furious person generally?
Oh, yes. I mean, like many people, I came to it late. I had seen the originals and I really liked the trajectory they took as they went on.
Right.
But I am one of those people.
And how did you like this one?
Well, I mean, I just have to say that this movie had everything. It had everything. It had wrestling references. It had Instagram references. It had the correct pronunciation of Samoa followed by a white person saying Samoa. It had self-awareness. It had crazy action sequences. And of course, because it is part of the Fast and Furious franchise, it had a diverse cast and a message about family.
It's true. It's true. I tend to sort of agree. It does. It is that sort of what could you possibly ask for. Christina Tucker, what did you think?
At some point during this film, I murmured, give this movie 16 Oscars. And then I walked out of the theater and literally immediately forgot everything that had just happened to me. But I had a fantastic time when I was there, and I loved every minute of it.
Yeah, it's funny. Chris and I saw the film together, and my reaction to these movies, and Chris knows this because he's seen these movies with me before, is that I always, at some point during the movie, just say, yay, and clap my hands, usually during the movie at some point. And I did that, but then Chris and I went and had a drink, and once we had had a drink, I said to him, the problem is I've already forgotten everything that happened during that movie.
Yeah.
Chris, you tend to be, I don't want to say the wet blanket of the Fast and Furious franchise, but the
more, more of a saturated textile, smothering, trying to.
You are the saturated textile of the Fast and Furious franchise. Tell me why, as a guy who likes a punching movie,
absolutely,
you persistently have
issues.
I know.
I have so many chips on my shoulder.
It's true.
Even though I enjoy watching them with you, I enjoy being in the in the Holmesian enthusiasm
field. It's true.
Yes, yes. Okay, so when I reviewed The Fate of the Furious, I asked the question, why just rip off Point Break, as the first Fast and Furious did, when you can rip off everything? In Hobbs and Shaw, we get to a point where cyborg Idris Elba has his back split open and he is being welded back together after a battle in which his hyperalloy combat chassis has been damaged.
Yep.
He is speaking to a disembodied, electronically altered voice who is telling him, they could be great assets if they could be turned to the dark side. Come on. Come on. Like, it's a little bit of, like, the, as I said in my review, like, the, yes, there is petty larceny, and then
reaction.
There is Grand Theft Auto.
Uh-huh.
And of course, you know, Fast and Furious, you want to go for Grand Theft Auto. I think, to answer your question more seriously, you know, the first movie is so clearly templated on Point Break, which is a great woman-directed action movie. When Justin Lin comes back for the next two, it's going to make 11 of these movies.
Uh-huh.
None of them have been directed by a woman. But that milieu...
Don't use my own talking points against me.
Sorry, yeah. But I mean, transposing the milieu of surf culture to Los Angeles street uh-huh. racing culture, I mean, that's an interesting world. That's a great environment for a movie. And as it has moved away from that and templated itself more on Mission Impossible... Really, Mission Impossible. I often feel like these movies are the Max Fisher players making Mission Impossible.
And Star Wars.
Yes,
and the Terminator.
Yes. And now I will say the weird, like, I saw some people commenting on a Kurosawa reference in the final act of this movie, which I didn't get. And I mean, I know my Kurosawa pretty well, but I haven't seen everything, and I didn't pick up on that.
Well, and I do think Chris is right. There's some borrowing that goes
Definitely
on.
Some borrowing.
Franchise to franchise. Does it bother you? Does it not bother you?
I love it. I mean, I feel like when it comes to borrowing, they do it well in that they do it in a way that is inviting. It feels like they're going, hey, we probably all like a lot of the same stuff, actually, right? So let's just have fun with that,
uh-huh.
right? And that to me is what really works about this franchise as someone who also loves action movies. I grew up almost, not exclusively, like honestly, most the other things I found on my own, but my mother was obsessed with action movies. We saw every single Jean-Claude Van Damme, Steven Seagal, every single movie opening weekend, every Friday night. That was the majority of my childhood.
Why are we not married, Daisy?
And then, but I also feel like there are times where those movies or people who, like, take a lot of pride, not you, Chris, but, like, people who take a lot of pride in loving those movies can be very gatekeepery, right? Like,
sure.
And I feel this a lot in a lot of things I love. I'm a huge sports fan. As much as I love it, I don't feel welcome in certain spaces around it. I am a huge comics fan. As much as I love it, I don't feel welcome in certain spaces around it. And these movies, to me, the references don't feel cheap. The references feel like, hey, let's just all get in on the fun.
Yeah.
And let's keep going and get crazier and crazier, right? Like, I think we all know, going from, like, Fate of the Furious, like, eventually, these movies have to end up in space.
Right.
They're going
to space.
Right. They're just, like, working
Absolutely.
Their way there. And this
yeah.
felt like the kind of villain that Idris Elba was felt like, hey, even we think this might be slightly too weird
right.
to put in the main franchise. But we also know that you're probably with us, so
yeah.
we're going to do
yeah.
it here. It feels really inviting in its own way. And I think if it didn't, that would be one thing. But I think it, like, takes what it is doing seriously without taking itself seriously. And that's why it really, really works for me.
Yeah.
And just that overall sense of fun and inclusivity.
Yeah, I totally, like, it would bother me more if there were no references. If there was like, oh no, we didn't invent this. Like, who could say where the Terminator came from?
Right.
Like, the idea that they're kind of in culture with us is hilarious and bizarre.
Right, because at one point they call him a Terminator.
Exactly.
They call Idris Elba the Terminator at one point.
Yeah, it was fully in world and honestly and beautifully developed. And I had a great time. What more do I need?
And I do think one of the big things that distinguishes these films and this franchise is that people are always waiting for, like, what's the funny action idea that you've never seen before? Or at least that you haven't seen before unless you've watched a lot of action movies, right?
Right.
That you may have never seen before, even though it may have been done before.
I think this movie actually has one.
In this movie, there's a thing toward the end with a bunch of trucks that wind up hitched to each other. It is one of my favorite action sequences. It's one of my favorite driving sequences ever. It's completely ridiculous. There's, of course, the necessary, like, something broke in all the things being tied together. Can someone hold it together with their muscles? Of course. And the other one is this sequence that I thought was really funny, that really made me giggle, of they love in this film to put the two guys together, like working on in parallel, right? So they'll have one guy doing one thing and the other guy doing another thing, and they'll split screen them. And there's one sequence where it's not split screen as much as it is, they just happen to be in two sides of the same room. Effectively, what they're doing is Dwayne The Rock Johnson is fighting the horse-sized duck, and Jason Statham is fighting the bunch of duck-sized horses. If you know the old, would you rather fight the duck-sized horses or the horse-sized duck? And I think they have a sort of a funny, would you rather fight a big guy or a bunch of smaller guys? And I think it's really funny. And they get to a point where there's no way that it would go down the way it goes down, where, you know, one guy, when he's done fighting, just sits there and taps his watch at the other guy, like, go ahead and finish knocking off all these dudes. Like, that would never happen if you actually were trying to save the planet. You'd try to go help in some way.
No, I mean, that stuff I like. And bringing in David Leitch as a director who made Atomic Blonde and Deadpool 2, and, you know, before that, worked with Chad Stahelski on the first John Wick. And, you know, they were stunt coordinators, second unit directors on many, many films before this for decades. But, I mean, I think that's what you get. You get a more inventive sense of the, I think the symmetry of that sequence, no, that's my door, pick another door. I think that probably comes from him, from, you know, just a whole career of figuring out exactly where everything has to be in the frame and how can we work with the strengths of the actors that we have to make them both look good, and which I think that is a more honorable and even artistic way of looking at it than the Wall Street Journal story that we spoke of before we started taping, revealing that Diesel, of course, Johnson, and Statham never want to lose a fight.
And probably negotiated a lot of guys too. And have it negotiated
away
that
not
they
to lose a fight.
That they can't lose a fight.
Right.
Yeah, it's true.
And I am a stan for the Mission Impossible films, and I don't want to lean into that too much, even though I think part of my sort of snittiness about this franchise is that they consistently do better than the Mission Impossible
films.
You always want them to be the ones.
I think they are
taking stuff from a franchise with it that's not any better on character, but it is better on stunts, and you know, there's more similitude, but 6 Mission Impossible movies, in at least 4 of them, Tom Cruise has either lost a fight to a woman or been rescued by a woman. Now, if Vin Diesel ever does that, I will eat my humble pie with a side of fries.
Yeah, not in fights, but in the Fast and Furious movies, you do have women who, they might not beat those particular guys, but they are part of the group, and they also fight, and they also get in there and scrap. And that's true in this movie, too, with Vanessa Kirby. They may not beat that guy. And I do think that you have to point out, if you're going to say, well, you know, Tom Cruise maybe lost a fight to a woman, I think if you're going to think about the inclusivity, I've said this to you before, I think it's hard to overestimate the amount of goodwill that this franchise built up by, from the beginning, being a richly diverse cast in terms of race and, as we were talking about, gender as well, including a lot of different folks. And I think the fact that it was like that has been something that has given it a sort of a populist appeal that maybe some of the franchises that
it's hugely important
you like
and
haven't
had. They're weaker on that. It's true. It's absolutely true. And you know, my knee-jerk thing when we're debating this is always, well, wait, is casting more important than writing? Yes, it is.
Well,
actually,
it depends.
I mean, like that we could still make the script stronger, and I would like it if they did.
Yeah.
You know, but casting is the key thing.
Yeah, I would want to just add though too. Like, I also really love the Mission Impossible movies, and I really appreciate how seriously they take action as well, like just always trying to find another level. But, you know, I would say when it comes to both franchises, I leave those movies not remembering plot points as much as I remember the action sequences.
Right.
And I honestly, like, until we're talking about it right now, having seen every Mission Impossible in a theater and having watched them more than once at home, I didn't remember that he lost a fight to a woman, but I love that Letty is treated like Dom's equal and that he never questions, like, their abilities, right? And so, like, that aspect of the role that the women play in the movies is really interesting. Same thing with, you know, before she was Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot was in the Fast and Furious movies. And so even though we don't always see them do all the things I'd love to see them do, they're treated with a level of respect and equality within the gang, right? And the family, that honestly sticks with me more.
Yeah. And I want to go back to something, Daisy, that you were talking about earlier, which is the stuff that takes place when ultimately Hobbs, who is the one who's played by Dwayne The Rock Johnson, we've checked several times, he's Hobbs, takes everybody back to Samoa. And as you mentioned, they really do spend a decent amount of time there. And I think, although it wasn't filmed there, it was, I think, mostly filmed in Hawaii, most of it. Most of the outside stuff. And then some of the kind of the big supersets were in the UK.
London studio.
But I liked that kind of change of scenery, Daisy. What'd you think?
I did like that, too. I liked that we went to all of these different places. You know, it's fun. As you were referencing earlier, the movie has these kind of side-by-side moments. And so Hobbs and Shaw are not from the same place. So we kind of start spreading it out. And that's something that the main franchise has done, you know, in a really crazy, increasingly crazy way as well. Like, the first movie is just like, we're in LA.
Right.
Like, yeah. They're like people who live somewhere within the bounds of physics in LA. And we've gotten far, far away from that. So I like that they're, you know, globe hopping. And I think it's fun, too, if you're going to talk about people needing to save the world. I want them to be going around the world if that's what they're trying to save, as opposed to we're saving
just
it.
Just sitting in LA.
I want them to put two people on the case, not just one person.
Yeah,
because this virus could kill 3.5 billion.
And
so
Vanessa
Kirby,
who is playing Shaw's sister.
Yes, Shaw's sister, back when they were little kids, when Deckard Shaw was 9 and Vanessa Kirby was 12 years away from being conceived, and they had little scams.
I think Vanessa Kirby was great, aside from the fact that it is hilariously unbelievable that she is in any way close in age to one Jason Statham. Her chemistry with The Rock was kind of question mark, but it's not really the point of these movies, so I didn't really care, but I was just like, okay.
So sort of obligatory, it felt.
Yeah.
And another thing that I talked about a little bit when I came out of this movie was there is a plot contrivance that sets up a big, giant, epic final battle without guns. Mm-hmm. And it is not just the fact that with the enormous weight of actual gun violence, I am not always psyched about watching a bunch of people shoot each other.
Yeah.
Not that nobody shoots each other in the movie, because they do. But when it all comes down, and this is kind of my one beef with the John Wick movies, I find the horse fighting and the book fighting and all this stuff really inventive.
Yeah. Right.
But then it comes down to just shooting a bunch of people. And in this one, not only are you kind of spared that experience for that final battle, but as always happens, it then pushes them to do other things. And that's how you get this. Yeah. The kind of truck fight, and
the,
you get
the barrel of monkeys,
the truck V chopper,
and with the sort of the and there's a whole a story contrivance for this, but sort of the weapons that are at hand, but not guns. And I was surprised how refreshing I found it when so often we talk about these kind of bombastic final sequences. Yeah. And it's not that this isn't bombastic, because it is. But it's differently bombastic. It's not just a bunch of people shooting at each other, and I found it more interesting for that reason.
I want to quote one of Hobbes's. Wait, Hobbes is Johnson, right?
Yes, uh-huh.
Hashtag get after it, hashtag Project Rock. Hashtag. Yes. Okay. He rallies his extended family by saying, they may have all the technology in the world, but we have heart.
That's right.
And it was beautiful, yep. And I believed it.
Well, that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Chris at CT Klimek. You can follow Christina Tucker at C_GraceT. And you can follow Daisy at RunDMR. I always say it, my favorite Twitter name on the internet. Thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
And thank you, of course, for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second and you're so inclined, do subscribe to our newsletter. You can do that at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here on Friday when we will talk about the new season of Veronica Mars.
I'm Shankar Vedantam, host of NPR's Hidden Brain.
Think deeply.
Here to tell you about our summer series, You 2.0. Ideas and advice about how you can respond to life's chaos.
Just do a just check to my inbox. Just check, just check, just check to my phone real quick.
With wisdom. Listen to Hidden Brain every week.